थे वासुदेवाया। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam today, I will be doing text number 19 and 20 of the fifth canto, chapter 26. That's fifth canto, chapter 26, text number 19 and 20. Translation: My dear King, a person who, in the absence of an emergency, robs a Brahmin, or indeed anyone else, of his gems and gold, is put into a hell known as Sandamsha. There his skin is torn and separated by red-hot iron balls and tongues. In this way, his entire body is cut to pieces. This is done while he's conscious. He's not under some drug. He doesn't take morphine during this time. It's done with full consciousness and full knowledge as to why he's being punished. Text 20, translation: A man or woman who indulges in sexual intercourse with an unworthy member of the opposite sex is punished after death by the assistance of Yamaraj in the hell known as Taptasurmi. There, such men and women are beaten with whips. The man is forced to embrace a red-hot iron form of a woman, and the woman is forced to embrace a similar form of a man. Such is the punishment for illicit sex. Generally, a man should not have sexual purport. Generally, a man should not have sexual relations with any woman other than his wife. According to Vedic principles, the wife of another man is considered one's mother, and sexual relations are strictly forbidden with one's mother, or sister, or daughter. If one indulges in illicit sexual relations with another man's wife, that activity is considered identical with having sex with one's mother. This act is most sinful. The same principle holds for a woman also. If she enjoys sex with a man other than her husband, the act is tantamount to having sexual relations with her father or son, because women are expected to look at men usually as their sons so that they have an truly endearing non-sexual feeling towards them, as you would towards a son or you would towards your father. Illicit sex life is always forbidden, and any man or woman who indulges in it is punished in the manner described in this verse. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Jaya Srila Prabhupada. So the question arises, why should one woman be lusting after a man? Why should a man be lusting after a woman? These are instinctual desires. They come with the body. So should we be blamed for that which comes with the body? It's God-given. And many people take that position. This is God-given, so why not? But we need to go back. You see, Srila Prabhupada came and he gave us much more than what appears to be on the surface. He gave us some great depth of understanding. And the depth of understanding that he gave us is that this lust that we have, originally we had the same lust in the spiritual world, but only with a different motivation. Lust is a part of the living entity, but there is spiritual lust and there is material lust. Material lust aims at one goal, to satisfy our own senses, stimulate our senses, gain pleasure through the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the genitals. That's its only purpose. And spiritual lust is the desire to serve Krishna with the further desire to please him through that service. So this is our original lust, the lust to please Krishna through devotional or loving devotional service. This is real. This is true. And when one serves in that understanding, in that mode, that manner, and one receives the reciprocation of love from Krishna, then the lust is fulfilled in the heart as transcendental bliss. It is felt within and it spreads from the heart to the mind, to the intelligence, to the body. Therefore, one does not need to stimulate the genitals because one is experiencing a higher level of pleasure. However, unless one is experiencing that higher level of pleasure, one will naturally look to the lower level of pleasure, because pleasure is our nature. It is our nature to enjoy. The soul intuitively knows it's supposed to enjoy. It's supposed to have fun. It's supposed to have pleasure. Now, originally, we were all Krishna-conscious living entities in the spiritual world. And we were all experiencing real sex, spiritual sex, the sex or the lust which comes from lovingly serving Krishna with devotional feelings. We were concerned about his pleasure, not our pleasure. We didn't have to think about our pleasure because that pleasure came automatically as a result of being concerned about and for Krishna's pleasure. But then a thought came to us. Krishna is receiving the pleasure. He's on the receiving side. We are on the giving side. What does it feel like to be a receiver? What does it feel like to get served? What does it feel like? Sorry. What does it feel like to receive? Because if you're always giving, you really don't know what it's like to be a receiver. So when the desire to be a receiver of pleasure becomes an obsession, an all-compelling desire, one loses his qualification to live and act in the spiritual world. He's no longer qualified. Because the spiritual world, the eternal world, has only one purpose, and that is to lovingly, devotionally serve Krishna, not to be concerned about ourselves. But once we start to become concerned about ourselves, I want to enjoy through the ears. I want to be served. I want my nose to be served. I want my tongue to be served. I want my genitals to be served. I want my skin to be served. As soon as I begin to desire to be served as a Krishna, as a Lord, I don't fit into the spiritual world anymore. That world is made for persons who surrender and submit and serve. This world, the material world, is made for those who want to be a lord. So we're sent to this material world where everyone gets a chance to be God in some degree, in some manner. If you're a mother or a father, then you can boss your child around. Do this, do that, don't do that, don't do this. If you're a boss of a business, you say, no, it shouldn't be done this way. You have to do it this way. So a person has the sense of he's important. If you become a big politician, then you influence the making of different laws and different ordinances and statutes and the like. And you are controlling people's lives through those different laws and statutes and ordinances. Therefore, again, there is lordship. If you become a big famous actor or famous sports person, you control the tastes of millions of people. For example, there's a thing called endorsements. If I endorse a particular types of sneakers because I'm a top-notch basketball player, then when all my fans see that I use those kind of sneakers, KEDS sneakers or whatever they're using nowadays. In my day, they use KEDS, but that's long ago and far away. And I think they were taken over. What is the big company now that they... Nike, yes. So if they show me on TV wearing Nike, then that's a million sales right there. All my fans see that I'm wearing Nike. I got a Nike T-shirt on. So therefore, you control, you influence, you have power, and you bring money to people. So everyone gets a chance. See, even if you're a dog, you chase after the cat. You're a lord. The cat runs away. The cat runs after the mouse, so the cat's a lord, and the mouse runs away. So the mouse runs after the cockroach, and the cockroach runs away. So the mouse is the lord for that moment. And the cockroach is running after the ant, and the ant is running after the mite. And everyone is having a day of lordship. But it's not very fulfilling, and it's not very satisfying, because it's only very temporary. Therefore, we have come into this world to enjoy. Arjuna asks, Krishna, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly as if engaged by force? It is lust only, O Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion, and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. As a fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, as the embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of lust. Thus, the wise living entity's pure consciousness is covered, is covered by his enemy, in the form of lust, which has many different degrees. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. And through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So, therefore, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are all working to enable us to achieve our materially lusty desires. And the more we achieve them, the more reinforced they become. So it's quite natural for us to want to enjoy. It's natural for us to want pleasure. Because in the original spiritual world, we were always enjoying. So now we're here and we're cut off from our inner pleasure. We're cut off from that because we're disconnected consciously from Krishna. Because we are disconnected consciously from Krishna, the result is that we're like a thirsty person who's looking for water. And you slake your thirst, and after a few minutes, again, you're thirsty. A person who's in Krishna consciousness and feels his connection and relationship with Krishna is always feeling transcendental bliss in greater or lesser degrees according to the degree of his concentration. So, therefore, there is an alternative to this material lust or material pleasure. And the alternative to it is spiritual pleasure, which comes from serving Krishna and loving Krishna. Now, when we come into this material world, certain things happen. The soul becomes covered over with different kinds of ignorance. The first thing is that he forgets that he's a living entity. He thinks he's the body. This is me. This is me. What comes out of my mind is me. Whatever is connected to my body, my car, my house, my wife, my this, my that, that's me. So he's forgotten that he is an eternal soul. That is the knowledge that we lose. We think that we are this body. That's another form of ignorance. To think I'm the body, which is what we call false ego, and to forget that I'm an eternal soul. And I forget that the business of the eternal soul is Jivera Swarupahoi Krishnera Nitya Das. The business of the soul is that he is an eternal servant of Krishna. The constitutional position, the basic inherent makeup of the soul, is that he is supposed to, he was, if you will, made or projected or emanated or manifested for no other purpose than to serve Krishna. That's his only business. But when he chooses to not serve Krishna and to live independently of Krishna and to enjoy separately from Krishna, he is going against his own true nature. And when we go against our own true nature, the result is twofold. On the one hand, we will have a certain amount of pleasure from the sense gratification of the five senses, but with that, built into it, is pain. This is what many people don't know. Sometimes you can find out quite quickly. For example, if you take a scoop of ice cream or two, it can be enjoyable. But if you take a whole quart, you may get an indigestion and you may throw it up. And then you will have pain. So that's an immediate or instant revelation. But generally speaking, the pains usually come a little bit later. You're taking this pleasure for the tongue and another pleasure for the ear, another for the nose, another for the jet, and the pleasures build up. And there's a balancing sheet, so to speak. You take 10 pounds of pleasure, you have to have 10 pounds of pain. They balance one another. And when the pain comes, the person says, I wonder why I'm suffering like this for. I didn't do anything wrong. Yet a person who performs lots of austerity, he may be able, or she may be able, to take much more pleasure because he's already put in the pain. He's done the pain in the form of the austerity. But the two are balancing one another. And they can never be avoided. So that's the difference. Now, even in the spiritual world, especially in Goloka, there's a certain kind of pain there too, but it's totally different. It's fraught with ecstasy. This pain is fraught with misery. The pain of the material world is fraught with misery. You don't want it. You hate it. I wish it would go away. Please, take it away. You pray to God. Well, what did I do? I don't need this. I don't want it. Get rid of it. Please. Why? Because it's preventing us from having more sense gratification. If I have a terrible cold, I can't even taste my food. So I can't enjoy the taste. If I have the flu, I can hardly stand up. I don't even have an appetite. I can't even read. My head is so foggy and so dull. So you want it to go away because you're being prohibited from enjoying through your five senses. That's misery for one who puts all of his happiness in or through the form of sensual pleasure or sensuous pleasure. Consequently, because people do not know of this alternative form of pleasure, which I spoke of, it's the pleasure that takes place within the heart. When the devotee performs any one of the nine different forms of devotional service, especially chanting the holy name of the Lord, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, or hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deities, offering prayers, washing the feet of the deities, performing practical devotional service to the Supreme Lord, having a friendly feeling towards the Lord, knowing that the Lord is my greatest friend. And ultimately, as Bali Maharaj, as was mentioned in the class, he offered his body, his mind, and his words. So when we perform these types of devotional service, and as I mentioned, especially the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, I don't hear you, Hare Ram, Rama Rama. That's a little better. Let's try it again. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare. That's good. I hope I didn't wake up a few people there. So that's the main point, to associate with the Supreme Lord through His name. Lord Chaitanya says, "O my Lord, your holy name alone can render all benediction to living beings. And thus you have hundreds and millions of names like Krishna and Govinda. In these transcendental names you have invested all your transcendental energies. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. Oh my Lord, out of kindness, you enable us to easily approach you by your holy name, but I am so unfortunate that I have no attraction for them." So the Lord has invested his various spiritual potencies in his name. And when we chant it with love and with devotion, with appreciation, with a sense of glorification, and even a sense of desperation, because we could die at any moment. We should never be so complacent as to believe, yes, I'm going to be here for another 50 years, another 50 minutes, another 5 minutes. Every person who's about to die now is thinking he's going to live for another 50 years. He's thinking. This is his madness of the ego. And that's because the soul is eternal. And the soul has become identified with the body. So in effect, the person has eternalized the body, has begun to think of it through his actions or his daily activities as if nothing was ever going to happen to it. Even though on reflection and on consideration or contemplation, he knows that the body must die. But the person is acting and willing and doing as if he's going to be here for 100 years. And he's hoarding, he's accumulating, he's amassing all these things, and then one day, finished. Everything he's lived for that gave meaning and value and purpose to his life, gone. He's like a naked person walking on the street. He's got nothing anymore. Think about it. Suppose you were just walking, you don't have any clothes, you don't have any family, you don't have any friends, you're just alone. With nothing. We once had a new bhakta, one of my new bhaktas, I remember. I went to India, and then I heard when I came back that he flipped out. And what they found him on Venice Boulevard, and he was walking naked and just chanting, "Hari Bol, Hari Bol," as he was going down Venice Boulevard. So, of course, the cops came and said, "Oh, those Krishnas again." They're always coming up with something new. One day it was Santa Claus suits. Another day it was something else. So as we used to tell them, yeah, we got a million of them. So the point is this. You're left in a completely helpless condition. You got nothing. And that's the position of the living entity at death. He's cut off from all the moorings, all the anchors, all the things that he held on to that gave value and meaning to his life. His wife is gone, his kids are gone, his dog is gone, his turtle is gone, his cat is gone, his canary is gone, his house is gone, his car is gone, his airplane is gone, the praise that he got from all of his family, gone, no family. You're alone and you're terrified. Look at Ajamil.
Narayan,
that was his last love. He was crying out for his little baby. He wanted to hold his baby while these Yamadutas put the rope around his neck and they're yanking. And then when he crawled out, Narayan, little did he know that he was liberating himself. He was rescuing himself. And who should show up but the Vishnudutas? And they told the Yamadutas, halt! And big, deep, thundering, rolling voices. And the Yamadutas, they looked most awesome-looking, horrible creatures you ever want to look at. And anyway, they stopped, and they recognized the power and supremacy of the Vishnudutas, and they got into a big discussion. The important point is this, is that these verses which tell us about hell, they're not just to be read about, they need to be meditated on. Because every time we have a temptation to sin or to offend Krishna, to violate any of these regular principles that we have vowed to keep, it's like kicking or slapping Krishna in the face. We said, Krishna, yes, I promise to do this because you're worthy of my giving up these things. So why? Because you have been so kind to me. You feed me, you clothe me, you shelter me. You give me education, you give me guidance, you gave me a great spiritual master. You give me all these books. You've shown me how to become free of all the miseries of material life. I owe you something, Lord. So please allow me to offer these anarthas, I offer it to you. In other words, I give them up as a result of, in effect, saying that you are worth giving these up for. You're worth giving these up for because there's nobody greater than you, nobody higher, nobody better, nobody grander, nobody more kind, nobody more compassionate, nobody more loving. So you're worthy of all of this and much, much more. I'm in great, great arrears, great, great debt. I owe you so much. So what is it? So I give up illicit sex. So I give up intoxication. So I give up eating of meat, fish, and eggs. So I give up gambling. And so many other things we want to give up for Krishna for no other purpose but this pleases him. When a person doesn't know what pleases Krishna, then he does whatever he wants to. He acts whimsically. He acts independently. But Krishna says, he who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own will attains neither perfection, nor happiness, nor the supreme destination. So therefore just acting on one's own will not achieve anything. And he says, therefore one should understand what should be done and what should not be done. And when one understands what should be done and what should not be done, one should refrain from those things that should not be done and should do those things that should be done for the pleasure of Krishna and for his own self-satisfaction, for his own development, his own growth, and his own betterment, not only of himself, but the whole human society benefits from such activities. Therefore, now that we understand that this lust that we have of the body comes originally from the lust that we have to serve and please Krishna. But if we yield to the lust to merely please and satisfy the body, then what will happen is that we will simply keep creating pain and suffering in the body. And we will keep reinforcing that desire. Every time you satisfy and please and stimulate a particular desire and you gain that pleasure, then an impression is formed in the subconscious mind. And then another impression. And the sum total of all those impressions have a pulling power. It's like a drug addict. First he takes one little hit, and then he takes another one. He still could, if he wants to, he could stop. But each time he takes it, the habit gains power, pulling power, and pulls him stronger and stronger into the addiction until finally he loses control over his mind. And if he is to give up any type of an addiction, then it has to be done forcefully. And so if these people are put into rehab, and forcefully these drugs are put into jail or wherever, and they're taken away. So we should never have to get into such a situation. Our only business is to try to cultivate more and more love for Krishna through the process of devotional service. And we should be so eager that whenever we see an opportunity, wherever we are, sometimes a person is doing simple things, just doing some simple service for another devotee, or sometimes something is coming off the altar, the light or a flower, even something simple. Oh, one may want to serve in the prasadam room, maybe. But the whole point is it's an eagerness. And a devotee who appreciates the great value of devotional service will jump on these opportunities. And he will not just leave it, because he knows that it's pleasing to Krishna. And the main point is that a devotee wants to please Krishna, not just 5 minutes a day or 5 hours a day, but 24 hours a day. This is our only desire, to keep Krishna pleased. And when he's pleased, we will be pleased. So, it is lust only, Krishna says. So, I'm getting near to the end. Let me just try to wrap these basic ideas up. The important thing is that we should try to be as conscious of Krishna as possible, especially when we are chanting Hare Krishna. One may think, well, how can you not be? You're chanting Hare Krishna. You could have your mind on other things. If you chant thinking of, for example, what are you going to eat today? What are you going to buy today? You're going to call your parents today? Or is somebody, are you going to get married in 2 years? As so many thoughts come into the mind, especially after about 20 minutes of chanting, then the thoughts start to bombard, they coalesce. So the thing is, this is when the love element is missing from the chanting, that's when the chanting gets boring. But when one acts actually directing his chanting to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and offering this chant as a way of saying to Krishna, thank you so much, Krishna. As we all know, Srila Prabhupada mentioned over and over again, that the chanting, the very meaning of it, is please engage me in your devotional service. Or if I'm engaged now as I'm chanting, and keep me engaged always in your devotional service. And by keeping me engaged in your devotional service, let me always be conscious of you. Let me feel my conscious connection with you. Let me not chant just mechanically or robotically or indifferently or uncaringly. Let me just say this. Any kind of chanting will benefit a person. But there are different degrees, different levels of benefit. So one who is chanting on the highest level without any offenses, with his whole heart, in a mood of virtually desperation, thinking, I can die in a few moments, so let me chant with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my might, Krishna, please hear me. Hear me, I need you, I can't live without you, please take me, don't let me forget you. When the devotee has such a mood, you see, that Krishna comes very quick because his devotion is so intense and Krishna is simply responding to that. If our devotion is moderate, is tepid or lukewarm, then Krishna will respond. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly, Krishna says. So we can't expect to have the ecstasy that Srila Prabhupada is experiencing, because when he's chanting, his heart is truly bubbling. So we should pray to have that kind of devotion, of that kind of intensity, of that kind of concentration. And we should pray to always have that appreciation of how valuable this holy name is. And when we know how valuable it is, then each sound, each syllable is cherished. The way a miser cherishes his gold, he holds it tight. So similarly, the words, as they come trippingly across the tongue, as they are pronounced, the word will take on meaning and not just another sound, but a sound of connecting with Krishna. And when we have that consciousness, yes, I'm connecting with Krishna. He's given me the means. Now let me just focus, intensify, concentrate, and give my all to Krishna. Then he will respond. And when he responds, we will feel that original lust, that original joy, that original fulfillment that is existing in the spiritual world. And when we have that, it always remains in different and higher or lesser degrees. But it's like a babbling, like an underground stream that's always flowing. It never leaves, unless, of course, a person commits offenses. And that Krishna can withdraw that mercy. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any comments or questions, please? Yes. He's coming with the mic, so people on the internet will hear your question. Thank you.
In one of the Bhagavad verses you read, it said that if a person has sex with an unworthy member of the opposite sex, then they go to this hell. So what constitutes an unworthy member?
Another worthy is, generally speaking, some of them already mentioned right in the verse. For example, first of all, a person goes to a prostitute. That's an unworthy person. Or a woman who's married and goes to a paramour. That's an unworthy person. Person she shouldn't be going to. Or similarly, or a man maintains a mistress while he's married. That's an unworthy person. And people will go to these different people in order, because their sexual lives often become quite dull. Seeing the same person day after day, same pleasure. After a while, it becomes like hackneyed. Someone wants some change, so he might go to a prostitute. He has some kinky desires like that. So what he does by doing that is reinforce the sexual pleasure in this form. And then he goes to another and another. It never gives satisfaction of any degree. It may be for a few days, a few weeks, but then that's gone. And again, look for something else. So the main point here is that sexual pleasure, while it may give immediate pleasure in the ultimate analysis, does not give lasting satisfaction. And ultimately, if one preoccupies himself with it, it will give lots of pain. Okay? Any other question? No? Okay, I'll let go to breakfast. Thank you so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki.